Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the program today Marty Jo Link. Her new book is The Drummond Girls, a story of fierce friendship beyond time and chance. Welcome back, Marty.
Hi, Vic. Thank you for having me.
Marty, we had you on, what's been a year or two ago, for your memoir, Bootstrapper. And at that time, you talked about this project, and here it is. You've done it. You've written about the Drummond Girls. Wow, this is a labor of love, isn't it?
Yes, it really has been. And I had the somewhat unique experience of interviewing my own friends about our friendship. So I think when I spoke to you last, I was just in the process of starting some of those interviews.
Who are the Drummond Girls?
There were eight of us. We had Linda, and I call her the ringleader because she's the organizational force and really keeps us all organized and on time and all of our details set up and reserved. And then there's Susan, who controls the money. We call her the banker. Myself, I guess I'm the storyteller. Jill and Andrea, who are the two youngest members. They're now in their 40s, but we think of them as the girls because they're younger than the rest of us. And if there's going to be any shenanigans, they're usually up to planning those. And there's Beverly, a real good friend of mine. She's the senior member of our crew. And Mary Lynn. Also, we have Pam, who is maybe the comic relief and the most serene, I think, of the group.
And this all got started a long time ago in a bar.
It did. Yeah, it did. There's a bar not too far from my house called PGO's. It's a one-of-a-kind place, family tavern, but can get a little crazy sometimes late at night. And all of us either worked there as bartenders or waitresses or were regular customers. And so that really, the bar was really the catalyst to our friendship. And when you work in the restaurant business, you become very close to the people that you work with because you depend on them.
And you had spent many years with a very strong desire to have some close friendships, and you'd had some disappointments along the way. And in the book, you describe an experience that you had in high school that had to be incredibly traumatic.
It was. And I think while I was writing about it, I thought of the number of people out there that probably have had similar experiences. It's almost like for some women, it's some kind of a rite of passage. And I was rejected by a group in high school. It was extremely painful for me. And so throughout college and even young adulthood, I pretty much shied away from close friendships. And I was interested in writing. I did a lot of reading. I had young children, so I was busy raising children. And yet there was this longing. There was this longing that I knew something was missing in my life. And I certainly didn't go to PGO's when I picked up that job application for friends, but it just miraculously turned out that way.
And one day, these three women who you wanted to know better extended an invitation to you. And this really opened the door, didn't it?
It did. And I felt so thrilled to be included. You know, I really looked up to them, even though a couple of them were younger than me. They were just so bold and so confident, kind of sassy, I suppose, in a way. And they just seemed to really know themselves and know where they were going. And I didn't feel any of those things myself. And so when they invited me to go away on a girls' weekend to some remote island in northern Michigan that I'd never been to before, I could hardly contain myself. Of course, I tried to act all cool about it, but I sure was excited to be invited along.
And that was Drummond Island, thus the name the Drummond Girls. Tell us about Drummond.
Oh, yes. Drummond Island is a remote island off the eastern shore of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And just to give you an idea of, we call it the UP here in Michigan. And if you live in the Lower Peninsula, to get there, you have to go over the Mackinac Bridge. And so that already makes you feel a little bit separate. But the Upper Peninsula is the size of Connecticut, Rhode Island, and part of Massachusetts combined, and yet there's only 300,000 people that live there. So it's still very much wilderness. It's not unusual to have to see bears cross the highway. There's probably more deer than people. It's still a big lumbering and mining operation in the Upper Peninsula. And off the far eastern shore, almost to Canada, is Drummond Island. And it's 36 miles long by 18 miles wide. Half the island doesn't have electricity. It has some incredible rock formations, and it's still what I think of as wilderness. It's still a pretty wild, untamed place. And so the people there are a bit wild and untamed as well.
And on that first trip up there, you women were on a shoestring budget, and you stayed in these kind of rickety trailers, didn't you?
Yes, we sure were. We sure were. And I think I write about in the book that I wasn't sure what to expect of where we were staying. And I was just so happy to be invited that I didn't want to be that annoying person that asks all the questions. And so I really hadn't asked very many at all. And I just assumed we'd be staying in a log cabin or maybe in some lodge on the water. I had done a fair amount of camping and canoeing, even horseback riding in Michigan, but I had never been to Drummond. And so when Linda drove her Jeep down this muddy, rutted path, and we ended up at this fishing camp with a couple of camper trailers up on blocks, to say that I was shocked is a little bit of an understatement. And yet, that's what we could afford back then. You know, we were waitresses on a budget, and we wanted to stay for two nights. And Linda had found something in our budget, and it was a couple of campers.
And this was in the early 90s, and it has become a ritual. And every fall, about the same time of year, right? You go up there for the weekend?
We do. The first weekend in October. We have extended it a little bit. We leave on Thursday now instead of Friday. Sometimes we come back Sunday. Sometimes we come back Monday, depending on our schedules. But we still the same women and the same weekend and the same island. And we sure look forward to it. We really look forward to it, and it has become a ritual. I think that our friendship has grown over the years so that it's not so much about the actual trip anymore. What's more satisfying is just spending that amount of time together.
And you have all these activities that have become ritualized in a way, ranging from the music you listen to what you do when you get across the bridge to the Sloppy Joes.
We do. Yeah. I can't say that we necessarily eat the healthiest when we're up there. If Drummond Island is a break from life, it's certainly a break from the constraints of eating healthy and going to exercise class and things like that. We take a vacation from that as well. But yeah, I think some of that has become ritualized, and that's a way to infuse it with meaning. Linda makes her Sloppy Joes, and we've been having those every year since we've been going. As soon as we cross the bridge, we drive straight to the Northwoods, which is a restaurant and bar, and we either have lunch or a cocktail and kind of, give a little toast to that here we are one more year. And whereas we used to spend an awful lot of time in the woods and two-tracking and partying at the bars, now we have a day when we spend the whole day in our pajamas and watch movies, and we get up early and we go for walks together in the woods. So we've calmed down a little bit, I have to say, now that our oldest member is almost 70.
Marty Jo Link joins us. Her book is The Drummond Girls, a story of fierce friendship beyond time and chance. She joins us by telephone from Michigan. When you get across the bridge, don't you do something called jello shots? I don't know what those are. What are they?
We do. Usually after we get out across the bridge, we stop in a little town called St. Ignace, has a Michigan Welcome Center for tourists. And a few years ago, one of the Drummond girls wrote the Drummond Girls Pledge, which I'm not sure I can say on the radio.
Uh-huh.
But we hold up our hand and we say the Drummond Girls Pledge, which is just our way to recommit to the trip. And we all toast that pledge with a jello shot, which is a little plastic cup that's been made with usually raspberry jello and a little bit of vodka and a little bit of whipped cream on top. and we do a Jell-O shot, and then from there we get back in the cars, and we have about 60 more miles to drive before we get to the ferry. And once there, we line up for the car ferry, drive on to the ferry, and cross over the Drummond Passage, which is about maybe a mile and a half of open water. And then we land on Drummond, and you can almost feel all of us relax as that car drives off the car ferry.
And the book follows the chronology of these experiences, and you don't cover every year, but we skip through the years, and we focus on certain years and certain times that you went there. And all these unique experiences that you've had, you relate so many of them. And one of them, which I really enjoyed, was when you were busted for being cutters on the ferry.
We were. Well, there's ferry protocol when you think about semi-trailers go on there, fishing boats go on there, the UPS truck, school buses go on that car ferry. So, of course, they have protocol for getting on and off the ferry, and you're supposed to line up and be polite drivers and go onto the ferry when the crewman tells you to. And one year, we had just been coming from a restaurant that's sort of perpendicular to the ferry line. And we pulled up to the ferry line, and somebody who was in the line in a pickup truck backed up and waved us in. And so in our obliviousness, we thought, oh, good, that nice Samaritan is just letting us take cuts into the line. Well, when we got to the front of the line, the ferry crewman pounded his fist on the hood of Linda's car and told us that we were cutters and that we had to go to the back of the line. And we were mortified, but later we thought about it and, you know, we figured out that pickup truck driver was not giving us cuts. He was letting us drive through the line to go to the back. Hmm. So we misconstrued his generosity, and forevermore will be known as cutters, I think. I don't know that you ever necessarily outlive that kind of a fiasco.
And when you're on the island and you're hanging out with the Drummond girls in various places, including bars. You let us know at one point that you're a pool shark.
I've spent a lot of time on the pool table, yes. And Drummond's one place where I get to play a lot because I have time. I don't have so much time anymore to play. But when I was younger, and actually even during the bootstrapper year, I made a little bit of money playing pool, and one year my son's school clothes and shoes were paid for with money that I won on the pool table. So I've put a lot of hours of practice in, and it's fun to play on Drummond with kind of abandon. You know, I don't have to be home at any certain time. Most of the people I play against I don't know. I don't play for money up there. It's more just for the glory of still being able to win once in a while.
And we get the sense, reading this memoir, that you kind of have an unspoken agreement among you that when you're up there together enjoying one another's company, that men are really not supposed to be part of the picture. And I think one of my favorite stories is the one where this guy, who I think is sort of an intoxicated off-duty policeman, is really being aggressive with you. And don't you, like, dump him out in the middle of nowhere?
We did, yes. We certainly didn't plan that, but I think, we were at one of the restaurants, and he casually knew one of the women or one of the Drummond girls, and so he came up to our table, and he wouldn't leave, and then when we go to Drummond now, we have two cars because there's eight of us, not just four, and so one car load of women had already left. And we were getting into the other car when he approached us, and it was pouring down rain. It was cold. And he said that the women in the other car had said that we were supposed to give him a ride. And I still can't believe we were that unaware that we believed him. Mm. We knew our girlfriends would never say that, but for some reason we believed him. We let him in the car, and we started driving around the island to look for the cabin that he had rented, and he couldn't find it. And then he started getting lewder and lewder, and so eventually we drove to a remote area, and we opened the door and told him to get out, and he eventually did, and we left him there. That was maybe almost 20 years ago now. And I can't, first of all, I can't see us doing something like that today because we would never let anyone in our car. But, you know, the trusting of youth, I think, is what put that whole thing in motion. Although later, Linda ran into his mother at PGO's, and his mother talked all about how well he was doing. So
oh.
We knew that he had survived the ordeal.
Good. I was going to say. Marty Jo Link joins us. Her memoir is The Drummond Girls, a story of fierce friendship beyond time and chance. Over the years, you women have been through a lot together. You went through a difficult divorce. You have other women who have gone through all kinds of things. Someone mm-hmm. had a spouse die. Another member of your group died herself. She wasn't very old, and suddenly she just died, and it was just a big shock. And you've all experienced this together. What is it about women's friendships that is different than friendships among men? Can you say? Can you put a finger on it?
Well, I guess, you know, I've been thinking lately a lot about friendship, specifically, you know, as the end result of writing this book. It's done things for me personally, even more than professionally. And, you know, with women, even though our friendship started around this trip to Drummond Island, I don't think we need an activity to be friends. I don't think we need necessarily a plan or an activity or event to be friends. And I know from my brother and my sons and my husband that most of the time when they spend time with their friends, it's around an event. Like, my husband plays hockey, and he has friends that he plays hockey with. My son plays soccer, and he has his soccer friends. My brother's a fisherman, and he has friends that he goes fishing with. I think what's different about women's friendships is that we only require each other. We don't necessarily require an event to be friends around. And the other thing that I've thought a lot about lately, too, is how on social media we call each other friends. I just looked at my own Facebook, and I have over 1,000 friends, but really, how many of those people would I call my friends? Certainly the 6 remaining Drummond girls and me are friends. And so, you know, I just hope that social media doesn't degrade what can be just a beautiful and meaningful relationship among people.
Too late.
Yes. I think you may be right.
Yeah. Marty, we had you on for your previous memoir, Bootstrapper. And in that book, you describe how your marriage kind of fell apart and the trials that you went through to try to keep your place out there, your farm. And in that book, you talk about your ex. You talk about him a lot. You don't really say that much about him as far as, you know, your attitude towards him. But in this memoir, you kind of pull out the stops a little bit. You're a little harsher with him. Am I correct in this observation, or is that just me?
I think you are probably correct. I think of it more as honesty rather than harshness.
Okay.
But this book is about adults and 8 women, and we were all adults in this book. Bootstrapper was about my children and me, and they were all still pretty young during the Bootstrapper year, which I call it the Bootstrapper year. It was 2005. And I think that I was more interested in telling the story of my boys and me rather than the story of the person who was absent.
Hmm.
Whereas when I'm telling the story of my girlfriends, you know, we all talked and helped each other through relationships and difficult times, and that was my difficult time. And so I didn't think it was fair to put theirs under a microscope and not mine.
And in this book, we also get to find out what happened to this relationship with this man that we meet in Bootstrapper, and the happy ending that came out of that.
Right. Yes, very much so. So there's some joys, certainly some joys in the Drummond Girls. I mean, we have some difficult times, but we sure know how to celebrate the good times too.
I'd say there's a lot of joy in this book. I don't think it's depressing at all.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
well, like real life, I guess. It's a mirror of real life and real friendships. Hopefully it's mostly joy, but you don't recognize how joyful that is unless you have some of the difficulties to deal with, too.
Well, there's a lot of humor, and there's also a lot of enjoyment of nature. And I think, I hate to call her a character, but I think my favorite character in this story is your dear friend Bev.
Mm-hmm.
I love her personality as it comes out on the pages.
She is so irreverent and so much herself. You know, there is no one else like her. She's extremely optimistic, which draws people to her. Everybody likes to be around someone that's sunny and looks on the bright side of life all the time. I know that when I was having difficulties in my life, it used to be frustrating to me because I would say, Bev, don't you realize how difficult that is? And she didn't want to go there. She wanted to look on the bright side, and she wanted us to move on. And I think all of us can kind of take a lesson from that. She has faced some things in her own life, and she's still cheery about it. She is extremely youthful for someone who's going to be almost 70 years old. And my life has been better for having been her friend, certainly.
Would you call her your best friend? Is that too?
I would.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
Okay. What's been the reaction now that the book's out from the Drummond girls?
Well, the way that I showed them the book has been different than any other book that I've written or any other article or essay or anything I've written, really. I decided very early on that, my friendships with these women is so precious that it's certainly more precious than a book. And so I said to them that they would get to see a draft of the manuscript before it went to my editor, which I've never, ever done before. And so one night we get together now about once a month at Linda's house just to chat and catch each other up on what's going on in our lives. And we had gotten together at Linda's, and the night was wearing down, and I stood up to leave, and I had a tote bag with me, and I pulled out 6 copies of the manuscript, and I passed them around, and I said, now, girls, I want you to find a quiet moment, read as much of it at one sitting as you can with the pen, and write down what isn't working, what I got wrong, what you're not comfortable with, and then you call me or let's talk about it. And they looked at me and pointed to my chair and said, oh, no, 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 that's not how it's going to happen. You sit down right now. And we ended up going around the room, and this was Susan's idea. She said, we're going to go from person to person, and each girl is going to open the manuscript and read the first sentence they see, and then close the manuscript, and we'll go on to the next person. Now, keep in mind, they hadn't read a word. They hadn't read a single word when all of that transpired. And we ended up sitting there and laughing for probably another 2 hours. And I can't tell you, Vic, that I will ever get a better review than that. It was just an amazing experience to have your work read out loud by the people that you love.
Did they then go back and say, no, you need to take this part out?
Well, when I first started writing, they were the ones that asked me to write the story after Bootstrapper came out. And I said, okay, well, you tell me what's off limits. What can't I write about? And to a person, they said, nothing. Nothing's off limits. And I said, well, you may change your mind after I'm finished writing it. And yet when they passed the manuscript back, the changes they had were things like, I don't think that was a Tahoe. I think it was a Bronco. Or that wasn't 95, that was 94. Or in Bev's case, I remember her telling me, you say in here that I didn't remember what my father grew in his garden, but I can tell you exactly what he grew. So it was things like that that they wanted to change. Nothing about the way we felt about each other or any of the big issues or the challenges that we had faced or any of the dicier and more private things that I thought might be difficult for them. They didn't have a problem with any of that.
That's wonderful. You were able to mine the collective memory of the group like that.
Yeah, and we've kept quite a good photo album. Of course, we all have cell phones now, and we're all taking pictures on our phones. But specifically for Drummond, we have hard copy photos that we have pasted in a big photo album with captions and stickers and everything else. And we also have brochures that we've picked up or maps and things like that, souvenirs. And so I had a really neat scrapbook to draw upon when I was writing.
And as we've gotten up to modern times, you've also become more high-tech in your amusements on the island. I had never heard of this. What's it called, geocaching?
Yes. Yes, geocaching. Geocaching is kind of like modern-day treasure hunt, I suppose, although it's more about the finding and the looking than actually the treasure that you find. But people who geocache use satellite coordinates, and they'll hide a little jar or a film container or some small container with a little notebook and a couple of trinkets inside. And then they'll go online to geocaching.com and plug in those coordinates. And then you use either your cell phone or a handheld GPS unit to find the location. And when you do, you can sign your name in the notebook. And you can either take something out of the jar or leave something in the jar or just sign your name. Hmm. But it's the finding, really, that's fun, because it's allowed us to see parts of the island that we wouldn't have otherwise explored, I think. I know one year, I think it was last year or the year before, we found an old cemetery of all people from Finland. And the gravestones are ancient, and they were some of Drummond's first settlers.
Wow.
So geocaching has really opened up some new areas for us to explore.
All those years you've been going there, you didn't even know that cemetery was there?
No.
Huh. Wow.
No, for an island that is 36 miles by 18 miles, it's incredibly rich and dense, and we continue to be amazed at the things that we have yet to see.
The book is The Drummond Girls, a story of fierce friendship beyond time and chance. Marty Jo Link wrote it. She joins us on the program today. If I had to pick a word to describe the way you wrote this book, I would say loving. It's very loving.
Thank you. I kind of think of it as this dual love letter. First, it's a love letter to my best friends, and secondly, it's a love letter to Drummond Island. In 2 weeks on a Saturday, all of the girls, and for the very first time, our husbands are going with us up to the island, and we are having a fundraiser. It's a book sale / fundraiser at the Northwoods, and we're going to be signing books, and the proceeds of the event are going to go to the Drummond Island Ambulance Corps. And so I hope that that's a way for us to give back to the island for everything the island has given to us.
Wow, that's fun.
I think it will be really fun.
I wonder if that one guy will show up, the guy that thought you were from, was it Hesser?
Yes.
I wonder if he'll be there.
Yes, we'll see if the excavator will be there, and maybe he'll even buy a book. I'm wondering if some of these people will see, you know, if they read memoirs, for starters, and if they will recognize themselves in the book.
That's one of the funniest stories in the book where Bev is, we won't talk about it, but the guy, you meet him in the middle of nowhere, and you have to read the book. It's hilarious.
Yes, but it is humorous.
Well, Marty, we really appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Vic. It's been great returning again.
You've been listening to The Book Nook. The book is The Drummond Girls, a story of fierce friendship beyond time and chance. And if you're up on Drummond Island in a couple weeks, it sounds like there's going to be a little party at the Northwoods.
Yes, and we'd love to have you. The more, the merrier.
For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening.